When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello and welcome to the Imprint Companion, a podcast dedicated to the new Australian boutique Blu-ray label, Imprint. We are talking about some wonderful discs that have come into our possession this month of July 2021. My name is Alexi Toliopoulos, and with me as always is the Zodiac Chronicler himself, none other than podcast master Blake Howard.
Alexi Toliopoulos, the man who found Drago and Desperado and is feasting on Netflix's streaming buffet. Thank you so much for talking to me about discs again for Imprint and Imprint Films. It's an absolute treat. It's great to be back. And I feel like as we've been exploring the different worlds of discs, it's nice to come back home to Imprint. Because
absolutely,
another, like, this is, you know, we've been talking about the different themes of the Imprint batches. This is a truly horrific batch.
Yes.
And in the best possible way.
Absolutely. It's a monster batch, not by just by name, but by nature as well. It is humongous. It is gargantuan. There are so many discs and films to cover.
So many discs.
So than we've ever had, I think, before.
This is like our biggest batch ever.
Absolutely. And all of them live in that realm of horror, which makes me very excited as a horror head. And I know you're a big horror head as well, baby. So I can see that you, like me, are interested in venturing into these unknown worlds.
Yeah, look, it's there's nothing more that I like, especially in the theme of the main quartet of films. We've got a couple of box sets that we're going to talk about in later episodes, but the main quartet of films are one of my favorite genres of horror, which is just like sort of implacable horror. Like stuff that you can't quite see all the time. You actually see the effects, the madness that it's ascending on the population first. And then you, that it helps ratchet up the tension. So like, you know, some of the films that we're talking about today, you don't get to see things directly, or you see things in strange visions, or you see things in, you know, you see characters like playing multiple people, and that's kind of weird. And it puts you off, and but puts you off in like the best possible way. And so that's my kind of, that's my jam, that like genuine implacable terror, something is coming to get you. Fuck yeah, bring it on. I like all of those movies for me, please.
It's an interesting quartet of films that we're discussing today. They are all in that realm of horror. I would say all of them are directed by pretty well known or very interesting, perhaps even prestigious filmmakers.
Yes.
We've got three that are lesser known, and then one that is an outright classic of genre cinema. The first one we're going to discuss is The Brotherhood of Satan from 1971. Then we're going to move on to a 1995 ghost story film called Haunted. Then we're talking about a 1980 Egyptian mummy-themed horror film starring Charlton Heston. The movie's called The Awakening. And then we're going to close out this episode talking about a genuine, absolute, barn-burning belter of a classic Stephen King adaptation by one of the all-time legends of the genre, Mr. David Cronenberg, and his film, The Dead Zone.
So good. Imprints, spine numbers 57 through 60. Holy heck. Let's get started with The Brotherhood of Satan.
There are things in heaven and on earth beyond the comprehension of man. Call them what you will. The occult, witchcraft, devil worship.
Satan! rise and come in, child. Enter for yet another lifetime in the Brotherhood of Satan.
The Brotherhood of Satan. A demon spirit of madness and murder holds a California town in the grip of terror.
My God, they're all mad.
Witches. Black artisans, celebrants of the Black Mass.
This is one that I've exhaustively dived into, and what you'd be really surprised to know is that I think the film geeks here would definitely know this name, L.Q. Jones. So if you watch The Brotherhood of Satan, you're going to see L.Q.J. credited as a main producer. He's also an uncredited writer. Now, L.Q. Jones was part of the Sam Peckinpah school, right? He and Strother Martin, who's also in Brotherhood of Satan, were like these guys that were kind of like these off-color comedic pairing that found themselves in a bunch of Peckinpah movies. But they start L.Q. Jones and his partner, Sean McGregor and William Welch, they wrote the Brotherhood of Satan story, which is about a family who, you know, just by sheer chance drives into a town and gets trapped by a satanic cult that's taking away children. So there's all these mysterious murders that are happening in the town. Children are going missing. They can't seem to stop these mysterious murders from going on and all the children going away. And there's a weird culty vibe at this sort of strange old palatial mansion where weird things are happening and the children seem to be being drawn there. Strother Martin plays multiple characters in this. And so Strother Martin famously... Quentin Tarantino said that Bruce Willis was the Strother Martin of his generation, which is, I don't know if that's a deep insult or like a deep, a really deep, you know, nice compliment. But
could be either with
me. It could be either. But what really struck me was not only is this absolutely a gorgeous transfer. I know that there's been a couple of HD scans, 2K scans, and of Brotherhood of Satan in other lines that aren't Imprint, but Imprint have brought this out. And really what is really striking is learning about L.Q. Jones as from Justin Humphreys, a film historian, as this producer, because he's like a quintessential Western like face shitbag character you've seen in 10,000 movies. But to hear he crafted these bunch of weird and wonderful movies really between kind of 64, 75, The Devil's Bedroom, The Witchmaker, Brotherhood of Satan.
Wow.
He's made all these weird movies about occult activities that have impacts on towns and then turn people insane and also plague their mind to maybe make them do crazy shit. And so Brotherhood of Satan is terrific, very disturbing, has some of the most unbelievably cool intercutting to begin the movie.
Yes.
I'm not going to spoil it, the movie, but suffice to say, the movie begins with this cool little moment of like a kid playing with a toy tank, and the kid and the little toy tank is making its toy tank sounds, and that is intercut with, again, by some devilish magic, a tank appearing on a road and crushing a priest's car.
Oh, wow. I love to hear this stuff. I love to hear this stuff.
And I'm like, from that moment, I'm like, there's this great like vision, devilish magic, projecting toys and then turning, manifesting them into these like crazy things or like life-size tanks as opposed to a toy tank. And I'm like, oh no, this is the kind of shit that I really like. It's a
oh my lord,
creepy movie, very well put together. I think it's got a lingering, a very lingering, disturbing quality. Like I actually had to have a bit of a watch cleanse after it.
Oh, wow.
Cause it's like, it's not like terrifying, frightening. I need to watch a cartoon, but it was just like disturbing, great images, great evocative things, great, great sort of portrayal of, an inventive portrayal of like death and cult activities and just people acting really weird that I love. So yeah, cool. This was a banger. And I know that it was my assignment to deep dive on this one. And Lex was, Lex had two of the other ones in the batch and knows one of the others in the batch extremely well. But I just, if I can sell it to you, my friend, that is the best pitch I can say.
Oh my God.
So,
Brother Blake, let me tell you this. Consider it sold. This has been the kind of cool thing about this episode is that we've had to divvy them up because there are so many discs to get through. So we're doing two and two this episode.
There's like 16 films, guys, in this imprint patch. Yeah. So we're divvying them up because it's insane.
Divvying them up. We can't handle it otherwise.
No.
But that was Brotherhood of Satan. I cannot wait to check it out. And I actually cannot wait to start telling you about the couple of flicks that I've watched this week. The first one is from 1995. It is called Haunted.
Does it exist?
Is in the science of reason.
Your book denies its existence.
There are no ghosts.
Has been invited.
They will want you to come and investigate.
To a house of mystery.
Nanny is convinced that Mother comes back here every night.
There are spirits in this house.
Do you think she's imagining everything?
Don't you?
To explain how illusions...
You're awfully brave.
...can seem to be real.
You feel you don't know how to explain anything, do you?
I wonder how I could have gone so long without you.
To accept that the dead...
You mean to tell me that you see nothing?
...can come back to life.
You're my salvation. I beg you.
I don't trust anyone or anything in this house.
Once you've seen through his eyes... ...you will... Haunted.
Yes.
And it is directed by, now I would say, a double alum of the imprint bundles.
Really?
Yes. It's directed by Lewis Gilbert, who is best known for directing some classic James Bond movies, The Spy Who Loved Me, Moonraker. He's also directed Educating Rita and Alfie. So
Talk about the Austin Powers connection. If you have directed Alfie and The Spy Who Loved Me, you are like in the pantheon of the Austin Powers universe as well. But going with one of our mutual faves, Aidan Quinn and Kate Beckinsale. Love Aidan Quinn, huge fan, and a guy that if you say to me, Alexi, 1995, I say to you, Aidan Quinn. Because that's like, that's this guy's peak of his career, mid-90s.
Absolutely.
Video store stuff. Tell me about Haunted.
It was a couple of years later where Chris O'Donnell takes that mantle away from him for about 3 months and never returns it.
Oh, so good.
But yeah, this is a movie that I was very interested in checking out because I do love ghost stories so very much. I love ghost stories. In particular, I love English ghost stories. Mm. And this one really appeals to me because it's a romance, or kind of feels rather romantic, if you will.
Yes.
And I would probably best describe it as kind of like... in the same family as one of my favorite horror films of all time, The Innocents from 1960, the adaptation of The Turning of the Screw. And I think that this lives in the same family, not quite as good as the best horror film ever made, but it is really good, really luscious and really sumptuous. And the whole kind of story takes place in England in like 1920s era, early 20th century. And the premise is that Aidan Quinn is a paranormal investigator of some kind, or a debunker, rather. He's a skeptic and doesn't believe in them, despite having had a paranormal experience when he was a kid. So the movie starts when he's a child, and his twin sister passes away, and he sees a kind of vision of her. And then he spends his adult life debunking them. He goes back to England. His family left England after the death of his sister. They moved to America. And then he goes back to England when this film begins to kind of debunk, but also like investigate this this paranormal experience this nanny is having in this old manner, if you will. And it becomes a romance between him and Kate Beckinsale as he's investigating her former nanny. And it's interesting because I would say what is cool about this movie is that it lives in, for the most part, 70% of this movie lives in kind of like a period piece, fun, romantic, a little bit gothic, a little bit chilly, definitely chilly, this movie. That's a cool thing, though. It's very chilly in this kind of like investigation realm of this manor and like kind of finding out the secrets of this place and like, you know, in like those Rebecca, Alfred Hitchcock ways as well.
You're speaking and all then, of my buzzwords right now with chilly Rebecca style horror. Yes.
And it's really, I think part of the magic of this film is it is directed by such a veteran of English cinema, Lewis Gilbert, who is a true... He's a great filmmaker, and he's a journeyman in the best sense of the word, where he's gone through countless genres. Like, you've got the some of the biggest spy movies of all time with the James Bond movies, of course. And then he's got Alfie, but he's also done, like... one of my favorite romantic comedies of all time, Shirley Valentine, which is just kind of like yes. a Stella Got Her Groove Back type of movie. And so he comes to this going like, what's something I've never done in my freaking decades, near century-long career is I've never done a ghost story. And so he's bringing like all this expertise of filmmaking to a genre he's not touched on before, but is a well-trodden, tried-and-true genre. So he, like, brings, like, these interesting elements to it, and it feels very classical, but it's got a spark to it still, and I think that spark really is these great lead, exciting lead performances by Kate Beckinsale, who's super young.
Super
young. It's,
like, an
early film for her.
Yeah.
And it's, like, her first time kind of playing in the realm that she's maybe best known for now, which is, like, playing kind of, like, a sexy character. Because before that, she's young. She doesn't play those roles. No. But then her with Aidan Quinn have really interesting chemistry. It's two great lead performances to, like, anchor you into this film. And I got to say, I really enjoyed it because I just love a good ghost story. I had read the book that this was based on that I didn't even realize until much later. I found a hard copy of it. I bought it from an op shop like probably 10 years ago and would have read it then like straight out of high school. And yeah, I think that it's really well worth diving into. I think, Blake, it's a kind of movie that you could really enjoy.
Yeah.
And I really think the special features added a lot to this for me because it's got a special feature that I found very... It's common amongst these imprint releases that I really appreciate and I think is deserving of these special features, which is a special feature dedicated to the composition and scoring of this film.
Yes.
It's an in-depth interview with composer Debbie Wiseman and it's called Hearing Things, Scoring the Haunting. I think this is a common feature that we found across most of the imprint releases over the last couple of bundles.
Yeah,
is something dedicated to the score.
They're very keen on making sure that the scores for some of these films are not like abandoned. And I mean, we're going to get to The Dead Zone, which has extremely iconic score. So we're going to talk about
an
that.
All-timer.
But absolutely. And look, in both of these. Both of these, you pushed my buttons, and I just want to do shout out people specifically know on the Brotherhood of Satan, The Devil You Know, called Inside LQ and JAF Productions, is the one on that as well.
Yeah.
But no, look, Haunted sounds great. I'm so excited. For everyone listening, we are going to watch all of these. We're probably just not going to get to them by the time you guys hear it, so we want it to be exhaustive. What cover? This is what I forgot to talk about in the first one. What cover do you like? Because the main poster cover appears to be haunted on the outside with Aidan Quinn's glorious blue eye a shining. Which one do you like? Do you like the slip cover that's the darker, more gothic innard cover of that one?
I like the innard cover.
Yeah.
It's tough to say because they're similar because it's just the two leads.
Yes.
But the font on the inner cover being kind of like an art deco-y slash gothic-y font.
Yes.
That's right up my alley.
Well, I like the innard cover of The Brotherhood of Satan because it gets this beautifully glorious painted Strother Martin as this like satanic priest on the inside. So you're sort of like a cartoonish avatar on the outside exclusive slipcase cover, but on the inside is this like his actual like a painted rendition of his face, which is equally scary. Now, let's go from chilly old England to the hot mummified corpse of a former Egyptian queen and Charlton Heston. Tell us all about 1980s The Awakening.
Through the ages, the ancient monuments of Egypt have been hunting grounds for archaeologists, tourists, and grave robbers. One by one, the sacred tombs of pharaohs and queens have been violated, yielding their priceless treasures and occult mysteries. But the evil one, Kara, has slept undisturbed for thousands of years, waiting. Waiting for the awakening.
This one also is directed by one of the true journeymen of cinema history, the most chaotic filmography that is Mike Newell. Let me tell you just a handful of movies for the listener, because I know you know this guy's got the weirdest, wackest filmography. Here's a handful of movies that he's directed. Four Weddings and a Funeral, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire, almost makes sense. Donnie Brasco,
yeah.
The Prince of Persia, Pushing Tin, Mona Lisa Smile, The Guernsey Library, Literary and Potato Peel Society, and of course, Mona Lisa Smile. Into the West, I'm looking at his filmography and every time I look at it, there's always something else that comes out to me. It's like, what the hell, this guy did that?
Yeah, He's so chaos. Like, I recently, because my kids started watching the Harry Potters and I found myself just like reminding myself. So I watched some of the Harry Potters, but genuinely, like, Harry Potter and the Goblet of Fire is the weirdest Harry Potter movie. Like, it's got the weirdest vibes in it. He's so weird. He did Prince of Persia, like you said, the latest Great Expectations. Pushing Tin is a deeply chaotic movie in stars, in all of the, just everything. And he's an interesting cat, shall we say.
It's unbelievable to be like the same director of Four Weddings and a Funeral also did Donnie Brasco. Like, you can't, my brain can never wrap my mind around that.
Yeah.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Brasco, I think it's a very underrated gangster flick that feels like a horror movie.
Yeah.
That's like the weird thing about that movie. So it's interesting to go back and see an actual horror movie directed by Mike Newell. And it stars Charlton Heston, one of the biggest movie stars of all time.
Yeah.
This was one I would have to say I was looking forward to because it had been on my radar for a little while because I do love a mummy movie.
Yeah. There's,
to me, a lot of exotic romance in the idea of like the universal horror monster idea of what the mummy is.
Yes.
And so my mind's always living in that world of like, yeah, I want to get another cool mummy movie like that. That's maybe scarier and more about that curse of opening those tombs. And this one is actually based on a book by freaking Bram Stoker.
Yeah.
So,
The Jewel of Seven Stars.
So I'm like in the zone. I'm like, okay, I'm okay. I got to say that this was a disappointment. This movie, I think really it is at 105 minutes. To be blunt, it's one of the longest movies I've ever seen at only 105 minutes. It was just a little slow. And it's one of those things as well where it's like, Charlton Heston, I think like I was interested in seeing him because I love him in Planet of the Apes. And I thought this would be an interesting kind of like adventure-y, but more so exploratory of like Egyptology, if you will.
Yeah, like finding that sort of explorer energy seems very Charlton Heston. You know, when you've got when you've got the Major Dundees, and you've got the Western characters he's played, and then you've got things like Planet of the Apes, the sci-fi, the explorer with the supernatural edge seems like a perfect fit for him, but by the sounds of things, it's not.
Yeah, to put it into context, this comes out in 1980. This genre is absolutely revolutionized and revitalized a year later with Raiders of the Lost Ark. So it feels like it's from a completely different era for a completely different audience. And so it really does, I mean, I hate to kind of put a pun to it, but a relic of the past.
Yeah, it's a relic. And also on the other bent, as you said, talking about movies that came out with like mummification or supernatural or those things. It goes Raiders in 81 and then John Carpenter's The Thing in 82. And it's like both of those movies revolutionized both tales of that genre. And it's like It's all over from there. It's all over. It's all done. We can put a cap on it. It's done now, guys.
Yeah. You can put in a freaking sarcophagus, okay, at this point. But I would say that on the positives of this, the new 2K scan of this film does look wondrous. It's not a bad-looking movie at all. It's a rather good-looking movie. Mm. And, like, for me, it also does remind me of, like, my other favorite archaeological film ever, which is the first, like, 25 minutes of The Exorcist. And it also doesn't quite live up to that either. But what movies do?
None.
No movies live up to that.
None. It's extremely hard bar. All right. So Awakening, a little bit of a disappointment, which is a shame. But, you know, mm-hmm. to be expected, you can't love every movie in every batch. But
the special features are good on it as well. There's another one dedicated to the score that is quite good. Mm. And then there is one specifically about adapting the Bram Stoker novel to the big screen, which is well worth watching. So if you're like Blake and I, and you have an interest in film history and genre history, there's enough in here, if you can get it for a bargain, that I think is worth exploring if you're a Charlton Heston type.
Absolutely.
And wanting to get out there on an adventure through a film.
Listen, yeah, and a second Charlton Heston, because we talk about seconds, we've already talked about the last film that we discussed being Haunted and Lewis Gilbert having Alfie. This is the second Heston. We've got Major Dundee and now we've got Awakening.
Of course.
So there's two in the imprint companion for Charlton Heston. But now, without further ado, let's get on to an absolute stone-cold banger of a film. A film that I hadn't seen. Mm. So a huge blind spot for me. David Cronenberg, the legend of Scanners, The Fly. I mean, everything, really. Yeah, even all the way up to Eastern Promises. Like
Oh, my God.
One of the modern classics, gangster films.
One of my guys, I would say. Yeah. He's one of my absolute heroes.
Big Alexi guy. His film from 1983, adapting Stephen King's best-selling novel, The Dead Zone, starring Christopher Walken.
You've been in a coma, Johnny.
For how long?
5 years.
The house is burning. Your daughter's in the house. It's not too late.
You're the talk of the town.
Because I got my head bashed in and I'm still here to talk about it.
Because you have the power of second sight.
I don't know whether it's true or not, these psychic powers of yours. Now, I'm at my wit's end, John. I could use your help. It has to do with these murders we've been having. The Castle Rock Killer. I saw his face.
Just thought I'd stop by here on my way to the U.S. Senate.
Greg Stilson. He's dangerous.
If you could go back in time before Hitler came to power, knowing what you know now, would you kill him?
I would kill him.
You'd never get away alive.
It doesn't matter.
I'm not crazy, you know.
Those headaches are getting worse, aren't they? As the visions grow stronger and more powerful, so the body weakens.
God has seen fit to bless you with this gift, you should use it.
Bless me!
Not only can you see the future,
I can change it.
If you haven't seen this film, just at a high level, Johnny Smith, played by Christopher Walken, is a school teacher, a deeply shit haircutted school teacher, might I say.
Oh, come on. I love Christopher Walken's improbably stiffened hair.
Instead of his usual, I've just been zapped by a PowerPoint hair, it's like really flat and this like terrible fringe. It's really, really, really chaotic energy from him. But he plays Johnny Smith, who gets in a horrific road accident in the rain and is comatose for 5 years. When he comes out of his coma, he's at a clinic where he's trying to be brought back to some semblance of his normal life and semblance of reality. And he comes out, and part of his recovery, he realizes that he's starting to have futuristic visions. To the touch. So he firstly discovers this gift or this curse, however you want to think about it. He discovers it sitting in his recovery bed in his clinic hospital, and a nurse comes over and pets his brow of sweat, and he touches her hand and has a vision of her daughter embroiled in a blaze of her house, and says she'll be okay if you go now, but your daughter's surrounded by flames and surrounded by fire. So it's this incredible, very I want to call it like it ruminates. It's not something that is in any kind of rush. And it just tells you the kind of on sort of micro level where you see a girl having a vision to macro level, these huge international sort of stakes level things about what this curse does to the character Johnny Smith. And you get to see, like, after seeing Walken with his sort of unhinged and bad haircut, you start to see Walken, like, the gift start branching out, and no matter what he's trying to do, he still finds himself having visions that have greater and greater consequences and greater stakes. And so it's incredible. The score is amazing. The direction is incredible. It's shot in Toronto, so there's some great special features on this that talk about like how cold it was and how specific it was to shoot this in Toronto and the snow and the cold. Walken becomes his more chaotic self as the movie progresses, and there's almost no one better at reacting to some to lines than him. It has Herbert Lohm in it as Dr. Sam Wysack, who's just terrific. A classic, you know, Czech-born British actor who's just an icon. Yeah, I loved it. And you know, it's one of those ones, it had always been one that people had said, Blake, you know, of the Stephen King films that don't usually get the glorious adaptations that they deserve, people always held The Dead Zone up on a pedestal to say, if you're going to adapt King, these are some of the ones that are the best. You know, now it's like It Chapter One very recently from Andy Muschietti, but it's also like The Dead Zone and, you know, Shawshank, for example. They're the kind of ones that people often talk about. And look, this is great, man. And the special features, just seeing the special features on this thing, I mean, so massive.
It's loaded, dude. It's loaded.
So great audio commentary. Stephen Jones and Kim Newman do it. This is from 2002. Mm-hmm. New visual essays. Dino in the Dark, like adapting Stephen King, like a whole bunch of new people talking about how to adapt King and does it work. Looking back, all new 2006 featurettes that were done for another version of the film are all there as well. So you can kind of go 2002, 2006, 2021 worth of special features. It's like it is a smorgasbord of stuff. It was great.
Absolutely.
Tell me about your love of The Dead Zone.
I really love this movie. I'm a Cronenberg guy, and it was probably one that I'd left till late, just like you. I had only caught up with it maybe 5 years ago. Yeah. And I really do like this movie. I like it a lot. I think I like it more because it's interesting. It's an interesting adaptation because I believe there was a point in time where it was going to be a TV show. Yes. And then it eventually, The Dead Zone is adapted for TV with,
yes,
like, who's in it? Some guy from the 80s. I can't remember.
I was trying to find it. I'll look it up now, but while you talk about it, to talk about the TV show.
So it was going to be a TV show. So the film's got this like anthology-like structure where it's almost like, I think, four parts, like four short stories adapted almost, it feels like. And I think that's a really interesting way because it feels like The Fugitive or something, like the TV show The Fugitive, where you've got four separate adventures following this one disturbed guy.
I can't believe I've missed this show. The Dead Zone, which ran from 2002 to 2007, starred Anthony Michael Hall.
That's who I thought it was. Johnny Smith. Couldn't be quite sure. Yeah, and I really like it. And I have the last Blu-ray version that ViaVision did put out before this new one. So I'm very excited to see that all of those great special features have been ported over, because sometimes when there are like releases out already, you lose some of those special features between releases.
Yes.
This one is absolutely loaded with everything you could ever want to see from this now classic genre picture. And it's also got a great supporting performance from Martin Sheen.
Martin Sheen crushes this movie. He's so wonderful, and he's not usually deployed in a way that kind of gets him to ramp up crazy, but holy shit, does he ratchet up menace, like intimidation. He's very likable, but he's got a natural likability, but then that weird impulse to be like funny and gregarious, it makes him makes him feel like a serial killer because he's a guy who kind of effortlessly makes people like him. So the whole vibe of him, Greg Stilson, who's an upcoming senatorial and hopefully presidential candidate that Johnny Smith encounters in one of this sort of, and actually a couple of these kind of anthology moments, but is the focus of one of them. He was a real surprise packet and a shock, and it was really, like, really lovely. And I think that's what I mean about Ruminate. I love that this movie takes the time to tell the story of this guy and have a couple of the chapters, almost like acts in a play, to kind of to sort of dive into elements of this sort of gift slash curse, to see how it changes his life and lets us go with him, because it would just be unconscionable to me that they would ever allow this to be made as a film again.
Yeah.
You know, like, Jeffrey Boehm's script does a great job of, like, holding it all together. But I would imagine now, like, how far away are we from Netflix taking this and adapting it into another series?
Yeah.
You know, I mean, not far, probably. It's probably already in the works.
It's probably in the works somewhere, at least. I feel like I've even read that. Let me just have a quick look while you ruminate on it more.
Yeah, look, and also Castle Rock became a TV series as well, which The Dead Zone was the first novel that that really spelt out Castle Rock as this sort of fictionalized Stephen King Maine. It's plenty of opportunities, and I think a lot of characters that have popped up in King novels and The Dead Zone maybe even popped up in that show. But yeah, it feels like a relic a bit, this does, because it doesn't feel like we'd ever get this to be made as a movie again.
Yeah.
But there is something amazing about when you cast Chris Walken as a guy who's a bit unhinged, it just works. You're like, I'm in.
Absolutely.
I'm in. Like, it's such great casting.
You buy it.
And yeah, like, as weird and supernatural as things might get, he just sells it. And also, this is what I can't stress enough. There's literally no one better almost ever than Walken smelling bullshit. Like, he's for a guy who feels like he's playing a game or he's very performative, there's something so great watching him react to characters who are trying to get one over him, because he just seems to look at them with, like, this, like, beautiful, like, huh, like, that's funny that you would try and do that to me, because I'm no person to be gamed. And so I deeply enjoyed this, and it's definitely one I'd want to watch again. And it's such a vibe movie too. Like, it's a great creepy sustained vibe that goes throughout the whole thing, and the cold works. And I almost feel like other movies like this have been kind of David Fincher's Girl with a Dragon Tattoo, which, like, not a lot of folks loved, but which I love. I know you and I love it, but not a lot of folks.
I love it.
I love it to pieces, right? But I feel like that part of why I love that movie so much is just the entire vibe. And, like, Michael Kamen does the score. Obviously, Reznor and Atticus Ross did the score for Dragon Tattoo. And so I feel like the vibe, the shooting, the cold, everything is just completely cohesive and just working a treat in this. So, yeah, love it, love it, love it. Such a great discovery. So stoked to have seen it. And I'm sure I'm preaching to the choir of folks who are listening who probably have seen The Dead Zone and love it. So, yeah, I'm stoked to discover it. And I'm stoked for you guys to get a chance to get it on Blu-ray and just, like, gush over all the special features like Alexi and I.
I might freaking watch it tonight. Like, I wish that I was very selfless in giving this one to you in our divvying up this batch.
You're such
and
a good
now
friend,
I'm
mate.
Like,
you are.
I'm absolutely pissed off that I didn't go, no, I'm claiming Dead Zone, claiming Dead Zone.
This is how selfless my co-host is. He knew I hadn't seen it, so he's like, yeah, you take it, bro. You take it, you know, you take it.
Yeah, I've seen and I can join in the discussion. I'm absolutely livid right now that I wasn't selfish in that moment. Blake, as always, it is a joy, even amongst the stresses of me being upset with you that I didn't get to watch this one. Always a joy to talk discs with you, baby.
Oh, man, there is no one I like more infuriating with the selections that I've been gifted than you, my friend. The discs will keep us spinning and keep us talking forever. My friend, where can people find you if they need more non-disc talk around the interwebs?
Well, if you like the horror talk on this episode, over on the Big Film Buffet, the Netflix podcast I host with Jen Fricker, we've been doing the Fear Street trilogy, which is a trilogy of slasher films that just came out across the platform over a month, which had never really been done before.
No.
But also in companion to that, we had some discussions about the themes of those horror movies with some great people. We just did one about queerness in horror with Reese Nicholson. There's one with our mutual dearest friend, Maria Lewis, about witches. And how they form out through popular culture, and about horror in general with one of the freaking maestros of all time, Mr. R.L. Stine.
Oh my God.
So that's something I'd love people to check out, is those six episodes there are really cool. But especially, I got to interview one of my heroes of all time, R.L. Stine. So I'm still living on that energy. And over on Total Reboot, I'm doing a mini-series called Cuisine on Screen with Mitch Orr and Aaron Chen, where we're looking at some of the great food movies of all time, kicking things off with Ratatouille, and that episode will be out in just a couple of days.
Excelente. Well, from King to Stine to another text that is deeply creepy, that is deeply in the mood for weirdness, Zodiac Chronicle, and another hero of mine, John Carroll Lynch, appearing on the 14th episode of Zodiac Chronicle to talk about the interview scene coming up. So guys, if you're listening to this, it will be 24 hours from now, you will have the latest Zodiac Chronicle. That episode is so ridiculously stacked. Two of my favorite people I've ever gotten to speak to. Obviously, one is John Carroll Lynch. Is my critical hero, the greatest living film critic in my mind, Manola Dargis, who is the chief co-chief critic at the New York Times. She basically unpacks the scene. John Carroll Lynch gives us insights about being cast as the character and everything in between. It's absolutely brilliant. I've been listening to it in isolation. I can't wait for folks to hear it. So if you're going to jump over and listen to that, please do. I would love if you did.
I am very excited because it's one of the greatest scenes in film history, this interview interrogation scene. And Blake, you know, with Blake Howard, you know, the guy knows how to take down and analyze the deep cuts of the greatest films in scenes in film history. This is the episode I've been waiting for.
Oh man, this is the episode I've been waiting to release. Manola Dargis was my first interview. John Carroll Lynch is one of our last ones. So pairing those two minds together to unpack this scene with me has been a treat. But thank you guys for listening. We'll catch you on another Imprint Companion or a Serious Disagreement, wherever you're listening to this. You'll catch us again soon talking more about the July Imprint batch. But keep on spinning, baby. You just keep on spinning. But still you Hi, this is Blake Howard, host and producer of One Heat Minute Productions podcast. We dive into the great and underappreciated cinematic works, often 1 minute or one scene at a time. Our crew of guests are some of the most wonderful filmmakers, writers, authors, and critics ever assembled. Our shows include One Heat Minute, Josie and the Podcats, All the President's Minutes, Increment Vice, and right now, Zodiac Chronicle. Check out oneheatminute.com or find us wherever you get your podcasts.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.